Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
You wanna know what we're talking about?
What are we talking about?
I wanted to help people understand the definitions around cloisonné.
Cloisonné? My favorite They Might Be Giants song?
And there it is. I did the research this time. I knew you were going to say it. You know, it actually comes up if you search it before the Wikipedia article. Cloisonné, what is it?
I've just told you it's a They Might Be Giants song.
All right, podcast's over.
The end.
It is a form of decorative art that involves soldering or gluing wire or thin strips of metal, usually gold, silver, brass, or copper. All metals you might notice are known for their softness. On their edge, so that all you see is the thin line of it, to a base material. And then filled with something, historically usually enamel. Cloisonné comes from the French... I'm going to have some trouble with this one. I can already tell. This is not my language. It's from the French cloison, which means cell or compartment. It refers to the way that the wires or strips are molded to form little compartments that are then filled with something, usually enamel. Cloisonné is also typified by the fact that the wires that form the cloisons are visible in some way.
All right.
Cool. As this description might have given you the idea, it is painstaking work. Early on, and for a very long time into pretty much now, all of the shaping of the wires was done by hand on a vessel, usually something like a box or a vase, which was also made of metal so that it could be soldered before glue was invented. And then each individual cell is flooded with a mixture of frit, which is ground glass basically, and water and a little bit of glue, or some sort of glue like boiled hoof, I don't know. This goes back pretty far, I'll get into that in a sec. And then fired at a low temperature so that the ground glass melts into a smooth, shiny, jewel-like appearance. Cloisonné doesn't have to have enamel, it's just commonly has enamel. It's also been used for like really intricate inlay. You can use cut gems, glass paste, which I tried like hell to find something to separate it meaningfully from enamel. Basically just like a rough kind of enamel. So there's that. Cloisonné is really, really old. It's one of those fun things that people are pretty sure probably developed in all major cultures independently of each other. By hook or by crook. I guess inlay is sort of like a human... I was gonna say human right. That doesn't seem right. We all have the right to inlay.
Human impulse?
Human impulse. I believe the oldest ever are from Cyprus. They're a pair of rings. They do not use enamel. They use inlaid gemstones. China adopted this a little later. I'll get into that in a sec. Early pieces tend to have really, really thick walls because we weren't good at making stuff yet. And this is also why you tend to see more jewel inlay with it. It's because they were thicker and bigger, which was easier for gem cutting, which is kind of a flip way to say it because they're still like absolutely very intricate and amazing. Okay, so the migration period, during which roving bands of barbarians, as me calling it the barbarian time somewhat unpleasantly, would suggest that we're pretty much fighting for control over land in Europe. Charlemagne is there too. Alright, all of this is because they made garnet cloisonné. I saw some in a museum, and you can be jealous of me for that. It was very pretty. It tends to be gold with garnet, which is beautiful. I was surprised by this because actually before I read about garnet cloisonné, I didn't know anything about the barbarians. So that was a learning experience for me. So shit really pops off in the Byzantine era. The Byzantine period normalized the standard kind of cloisonné. They loved cloisonné. And they managed to perfect the vitreous enameling process, which made their cloisonné at the time the best cloisonné. But because this was the Byzantine era, it was all religious. Pretty much strictly. Because they didn't talk about anything else there. Ever. They also had thinner wires, like their metal workers had better tools to make the wires thinner, smaller, and into more intricate images. You get lots and lots and lots of images of saints. Byzantine era also notably would start a lot of kerfuffle much, much, much later between the Protestants and the Catholics and the Orthodox Church, because their habit of making everything really colorful and shiny pissed off pretty much every other kind of Christian. I just thought it was interesting to go back that far to like, man, they sure did mess a lot of things up with this. It's like very specifically this is the enameled icons, because they were really, really opulent. Like, you look up one, all jewel tones, set in gold. Like, pretty much Martin Luther is having a conniption right now listening to me. Because I know he's in the room.
He's always with us, and it hurts.
Sneering at my jewelry.
Your jewelry is not, like, sponsored by the Catholic Church, though, so I think your jewelry is probably fine.
Yeah, mine was kind of in defiance of it, in a way.
Yeah. So, like, Martin Luther is, like, on board with your piercings.
Picturing Martin Luther with two really gaudy nipple piercings.
Hell yeah.
It's like, take that, Catholics. Everyone's standing around, I'm like, I don't understand it, but God, I like his style. If you guys are looking to start another Protestant schism, that's the way to do it. I'll follow you in a heartbeat. So, Byzantine era, two major styles of new cloisonné. Volschmelz and Senkschmelz. Volschmelz is when the base of the plate, or usually plate or medallion or something, is covered in enamel. The edges of the plate are turned up to form a reservoir, and the wires are soldered in place to form the cloisons, and the enamel design covers the entire plate. Senkschmelz, which means sunken melt, that technique is that the cloisons are hammered down. Well, the well that holds the cloisons are hammered down, kind of making a...
dent?
Yes. Which the cloisons are then applied to it, which leaves the entire surface flush. So all the enamel is flush with the gold background. This is important. It's for reasons.
There will be a test.
There will be a test. I will be in your home later. And I will be saying German at you. And you'll be like, God, I didn't even listen to the episode today. And if you're good, if you get the test right, I leave cloisonné under your pillow. So, Byzantines also introduced what might be everyone's favorite cloisonné, plique à jour. Side note, I tried to figure out and could not figure out why, despite the very long, very storied history of cloisonné, and despite the fact that China and Japan are considered the masters of cloisonné, why all the names are in French, I don't know. In fact, the only relief we get from French is the German that I just said. I couldn't figure out why we went with French, like as a blanket.
I'm gonna go ahead and blame Charlemagne.
It was probably his fault, right?
Most things are.
Dude, that was me foreshadowing when I said Charlemagne was there too.
Oh.
What I am is a literary master. So plique à jour was and is the most complicated style that involves building up a piece of cloisonné in the traditional fashion by piecing together thin wires to form the image, flooding with vitreous enamel, usually. In this case, very specifically, actually. And the difference is that this is done on a base of either mica or thin copper, and the base is removed after the enamel set, leaving a transparent enamel with thin wires behind, kind of like a mini stained glass window. It is very complicated. It is very hard. It is very touchy. Very fragile. Very few pieces of it remain, comparatively to how many we think were made. It's very rare as a result. This technique is also called Shotai Shippo in Japan, who, despite adopting the technique much later than pretty much everyone else, went on to absolutely kill it. Fun fact, Shippo means seven treasures, which is a reference to the seven treasures mentioned in Buddhist texts, and refers to all of the beautiful colors of the enamel, corresponding to gemstones that were the seven treasures. Anyway, dialing back a minute, China got cloisonné in about the 13th century, and maybe this is cruel for me to find funny because of the fall of Constantinople, because all the artisans ran to China.
So China took in Constantinople's refugees and acquired cloisonné as a result?
Yep.
Sick.
And at first, China kind of thought it was just kind of, you know, it was like foreign garbage trash. It looked gaudy, especially the emperor at the time was just like, oh my God, that's a lot of colors. I really prefer white, porcelain, and blue. Eventually, it would catch on, like a lot of things, just sort of over time, people looked at it and said, actually, this is really pretty. Originally, they put it in temples, where its incredibly opulent, flashy appearance did kind of suit the setting. And from there, people just said, dang, that's pretty, I want it in my house. This is a shout out to one Cao Mingzhang, who wrote in the 12th century A Study of Antiquities, so he was really way ahead of the curve, and just said they were ugly and unbefitting of a scholar or lady's chambers.
Damn.
Burn. The medieval times, not the restaurant.
I was just gonna say, my favorite restaurant.
brought champlevé enamel again. There's the French. For a technique that wasn't founded in France. this technique is the spaces, called the cloisons, are carved out or molded into the base, which makes it faster and easier to do. This differs from another medieval technique, bassetal. Did I mention I don't like French much? Bassetal is a similar technique where the cloisons are carved out or molded in to the original base, but Champlevé, who started the Satanist temple,
No, you're thinking of his stepbrother Anton.
Oh, there we go. Charlemagne. Nope. Champlevé.
Oh, Champlevé.
Thank you. Champlevé, the cells, the cloisons, were very rough, and it was almost exclusively for opaque enamels. Basse-tail. I read how to pronounce it 7 times, and then I forgot.
Basse-tail,
I think. Is the same thing, but it was very smooth on the bottom, and you could use transparent enamel, which gave it a very unique light-catching effect.
Sick.
You don't know how to pronounce it either, do you?
Nope.
And you studied French in high school, and as much as anyone studying in high school. This is the basse-tail method is seen famously in Fabergé eggs.
Hey.
Yeah.
Those.
You know, those. Inherently the funniest things to survive in the antiques world because they were just pointless, dumb, idiot eggs.
They're too much money machines, essentially.
Basically, yeah, well. And then everyone wonders, why the Bolshevik Revolution? I don't know. Because you had a $4 million egg in your living room. And don't get it twisted, the first one, literally just an egg.
The peasants are starving. Why are they mad about my $4 million egg?
It looks like the temple. Don't you love it? Peasants, peasants! I need you to go fight in the First World War. No, I don't know why. I need more eggs! I say all of this with love as a person who adores Fabergé. I do understand that maybe the people buying them weren't doing the right thing with their money.
Yeah. I am reminded of Tiffany's, like, several thousand dollar solo cups.
Yeah, it's a lot like that.
It's a bit like that.
I'd actually call that a one-to-one comparison. It's just a dumb, stupid thing you bought to prove you're rich.
If you buy this, you're asking for the guillotine.
It's weird, too, because people rarely typify it. Well, like, well, he bought it for his wife because she loved the stupid eggs so much. It's like,
okay, well, maybe she should get some taste and also some perspective.
Now. Anyway, the point of all that is that Fabergé eggs have a really specific kind of luster that is granted to them by Fabergé and later the people working under him. They had a very masterful technique of the basse-tail method. Did want to go back a little bit. I do find it very funny. Japan adopted cloisonné in the 19th century. You may have noticed that that's many, 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 many years after literally everyone else.
Is it because they had isolated themselves from the rest of the world until then?
Yes. But I also do think that it is cosmically the funniest thing that when the Japanese took on cloisonné, they proceeded to make their cloisonné the benchmark of all cloisonné, outstripping even China, who had done their very best to be the best.
They got a new thing and said, oh, this is cool. How quaint how you do it. Here's what it would look like if it were perfect.
Exactly.
Japan out.
Exactly. One of the finest Japanese pieces of cloisonné, which I will be linking the picture to later, is a bowl done entirely in plique à jour.
Damn.
Plique à jour is usually relegated to small pieces, like jewelry. Notably, Japan also crushed that. Also notably, they feature very prominently into geisha ornaments in the 19th century.
Ho ho.
That's just a fun fact for all y'all out there who like Japan. Weebs. So because plique à jour is, again, notoriously a very difficult craft. They made a whole bowl! just crushed it. Just absolutely crushed it in every single way. There are Japanese pieces of cloisonné where the enamel, by the way, which is just wet ground glass when you apply it, is handled in an almost watercolor-like fashion.
They fucking would.
Yeah. It is beyond beautiful. And then there are some pieces that are very minimalist on purpose. One piece at Sotheby's was a clamshell pink background with the enamel, again, painted on freehand in the shape of a swan, where the only actual cloisonné piece was the beak and the eyes.
Fuck.
Absolutely masterful.
Goddamn.
Just crushed it.
Crushed it like glass.
And again, crushed it harder somehow than China, who had gone on to define past Fabergé and the Tsarist enamels, what enamel could be and should be.
Fuck, dude.
Japan actually interestingly introduced the what will now come to typify fake cloisonné, in that sometimes they put the cloisons for show. They had gotten so good at applying the enamel that they could create the effect of cloisonné, very careful, very well manipulated application without needing the walls to separate the pieces out. And sometimes they would put in little chunks of the strips just to say, yeah, well, I would have needed this if I were less of an artisan.
I could have done it this way if I wanted, but I did it the hard way instead, because fuck you.
Exactly. That's just me fanning over how much I love Japanese cloisonné.
I know.
Plikajor is next level. Oh my god. So, that's the definitions. I bet you're thinking, I want some.
Yeah.
You don't. It's expensive.
Oh.
Unlike some of the other things we cover here, this one has a prohibitively high entry cost. That being said, modern cloisonné, it is still mostly hand-done if you're willing to pay a lot. It's still worth collecting. It's still deeply beautiful. It's still a handcrafted object. If you want to get started in vintage cloisonné, you would start in the 19th century. You would maybe want to go for some of the European stuff because the Japanese benchmark starts at 1,000 and only gets higher from there. You will still be looking at anywhere from $100,000 to $100,000. I don't want to scare anybody off. I own a couple of pieces. I own some little finger bowls that ran me like 30. You can find pieces here and there. They'll be of inferior quality, but still. The real trick is to learn how to identify real cloisonné from the new fakey-fake bullshit. Earlier Japan would confound us because the fakey-fake bullshit tends to have these like floating pieces of cloisonné wire. I would just go ahead and assume that if you're seeing that at a yard sale, it's fake. And probably not a priceless Japanese artifact. Cloisons that don't actually form cells are a huge giveaway that it's a mass-produced piece. They kind of exist just to be pretty and give the impression of cloisonné. What you're looking for are hand-wrought cloisons that create cells that hold their enamel. What you're also looking for are smooth cloisons. A cloison that is rough or bumpy or in some way visibly detached from the other cloisons is fake. Also check the weight and heft for the base material. This is one of those things where it should be heavier. It should be made on either a very heavy, chunky piece of porcelain or earthenware much later, or more commonly, metal. But a nice, big, chunky, heavy piece of metal. Usually like a nice, big piece of brass or copper. So the heavy equals high quality equals higher chance it's old. Lightweight is very, very suspicious. And also, you check the colors. A lot of what we'll call fake enamels are poured plastic. They're easy to spot because they... They're easy to spot if you've seen some real cloisonné, because they don't have the same jewel tones because they're not glass, basically.
I'd also imagine that they wouldn't stay as shiny as long because plastic gets scratched up real good easy.
Exactly. Nailed it. And that's that for cloisonné, honestly.
All right.
Oh, I forgot to mention about the cloisonné process. It's insane. You have to apply enamel and you fill it, and then when you fire it, it shrinks, meaning that at minimum you have to apply each cloison 5 times or so before it's done. And then you have to buff it all down so that it's like a singular finish.
Fuck, dude.
It's so incredible. I feel like cloisonné pieces get overlooked a lot, and I don't know why, because they're next level beautiful. Oh my god, I went to this one museum, right? There was a piece from a Chinese temple, was like a foo dog. The whole thing was cloisonné, but this thing was like 4 feet tall and 6 feet across.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shit.
And someone had like, and you look at it and you can see the handwork on the cloisons. Ah, man, get into it. Check it out. You'll be inspired somehow, I guarantee. Sources include today.
Charlemagne.
He was there too. metmuseum.org/TOA/HD/claws/HD_claws.htm. Should have tiny URL'd that one. uncommonobjects.com/cloisonné. Thank you for your reasonable web path. antique-marks.com/cloisonnéware. And dustyoldthing.com/antique-modern-cloisonné. And Wikipedia for some help with pronouncing boss tail, which I fucked up anyway.
Thanks, Wiki.
Donate to them.
Donate to Wikipedia. If you would like to talk to us about cloisonné or antiques in general, or just want to say hey, you can contact us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or you can check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks. And while you're there, you can join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, and make some friends who are freaks for antiques. If you would like to check out some deleted scenes, you can get those on our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks, where we also have the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
Sometimes it has a cat.
Sometimes a giant vegetable.
Actually, I think most times these days. I am really head over heels for giant vegetable postcards.
And our Etsy shop is back up!
Just put up Gonna have some hat pins coming in. Just put up those animal traps and some pieces that are bone.
Sick. And you can get those at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks, where we also have stickers and t-shirts.
Yes. Yes, I do. The stickers are up as well.
Hell yeah. And thank you to all of our current Patreon supporters for keeping the podcast lights on and paying our hosting fees.
And filling our hearts with warmth and love.
And thank you for listening.
That's right, you. Bye.
Bye.